Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Okay, we're getting close to election season and all kinds of exciting stuff going on here. Couple weeks ago, we did a poem that dealt with pharyngitis, and we reviewed sort of clinical decision rules around testing. This week we're going to look at community-acquired pneumonia, a community-acquired pneumonia defined as acute infection of the pulmonary parenchyma in a patient who has acquired the infection in the community, obviously. This is differentiated from hospital-acquired pneumonia. It's common. It's potentially serious. Lots of people die from it. You know, it is, while the pneumonia occurs in the community, it often ends up with patients being treated in the hospital. Determining whether a patient with community-acquired pneumonia can be safely treated as an inpatient or requires hospitalization is really important. It has huge cost implications and huge quality of care implications, and as listeners of the series know, being in a hospital isn't a safe place if you don't absolutely positively need to be there. A severity of illness is the most critical factor, and things like ability to maintain oral intake, likelihood of compliance, substance abuse, cognitive impairment, living situation, functional status, all of these things that are non-medical play a huge role in the doctor's mind in terms of can someone take care of themselves at home or do they need to be hospitalized? Once they're in the hospital, the question is how long they need to stay there and how early we can discharge them. Mark's picked a really good study this week. It comes from the Archives of Internal Medicine, and it asks, does a pathway that emphasizes early mobilization and using objective criteria to discharge patients and switch from IV antibiotics to oral antibiotics, does this decrease the length of stay for patients who have been hospitalized with community-acquired pneumonia? Mark, what did they find in this randomized control trial?
Yeah, it was a great study. And, you know, it shows that a lot of this stuff is not rocket science, and it's a matter of doing it consistently and, you know, identifying good evidence-based practices and doing them consistently or getting someone else to help you do them. And they identified immunocompetent adults who had community-acquired pneumonia and who needed to be hospitalized. And by the way, a really well-validated clinical decision rule is called the CURB 65. And if you just Google CURB 65 as a single word, you'll find studies describing it. It's a very simple point score. I think there are 5 items in it, and you can use it. It's been validated in about 20 studies all over the world, and you can use it to help you, you know, make a decision about whether someone needs to go in the hospital or stay home. It's a decision support. You know, there obviously are other factors involved. It's not a decision replacement, but it's, you know, can help with that decision. So anyway, these folks were hospitalized. There were 401 patients, and half were randomized to usual care and half to this pathway. And like I said, not rocket science, just 3 steps. Early mobilization of patients was the first one, so get them up and get them moving. Switch to oral antibiotics when the patient was clinically improved and when they had stable vital signs and there were no signs of sepsis or exacerbation of major comorbidities like heart failure. And third, send them home when they're on oral antibiotics, when they're back to their baseline mental status, and when they're oxygenating either on room air or on their home oxygen therapy. So they used a printed checklist. They put it in the patient's charts to remind the physicians. So very low tech. And they found the groups were the same at baseline. And they actually, you know, the docs who were in the usual care group and the checklist group used similar initial antibiotics and the organisms were similar. And what they found was a pretty big difference. The protocol group had the usual care group had a 6-day length of stay was their average, and the protocol group 3.9, so over 2 days less. And, you know, 2 days is huge in hospitalization and length of stay. You know, people are excited by 1 day less. Patients in the study group had less duration of IV antibiotics, about 2 days versus 4 days. So that's one of the key points is get them to oral as soon as you can. And there were no differences in overall mortality 30-day readmission rates, complications, patient satisfaction. I'm sure surprised they weren't happy to be going home sooner. And the usual care group were actually more likely to get thrombophlebitis, probably because they were on those IV antibiotics for longer. So bottom line is a very simple protocol, early mobilization, get them on oral antibiotics when you can, and send them home when they're on orals, baseline mental status, and oxygenating will reduce length of stay and actually improve some outcomes.
Great. And I think that what was nice here is that they looked at that 30-day readmission, because you can discharge anybody. The question is, are they going to come back either as sick or sicker than when you discharge them? So it is a nice study. A couple of other quick points. One is the old printed checklist. I'm not sure in my hospital I could find a piece of paper anymore. It's a whole new world. And
patient's forehead or something like that. Yeah.
Exactly. In fact, yesterday I was in clinic and I asked an intern to write a patient a prescription, and 10 minutes later I saw him sort of rumming around the hallway. I said, what's going on, Juan? He goes, I can't find a prescription. I said, well, here, I'll give you one. I went and gave him a blank prescription. He goes, you know, Dr. Wilkes, I have to tell you, I don't think I've ever filled out one of these. How do I do this? It's a different generation.
Oh, are you old, Mike, man?
Absolutely. The other point I just wanted to come back and stress is you stressed it at the beginning. But this idea of consistency across all diseases and patient groups, I mean, this has really been shown that if you do something and you do it consistently and perhaps have a team that's responsible for doing that and perhaps reminders in the electronic health records, et cetera, that, you know, whatever it is, it usually leads to better care.
Oh, and dramatically. I mean, we've seen, you know, over and over studies looking at hand washing and in the OR, you know, patient safety in the OR, you know, cardiovascular disease, chest pain units, stroke units. They've all found this. And the things are not typically very complicated. And it's just that, you know, there's a lot to remember. And this is just, these are memory aids. They help remind us what to look for. And, you know, it's not a loss of independence. And it's not saying you can't still overrule them, but at least you're being reminded. And, you know, there's, again, some consistency. You know, what's the saying? You know, foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. But, you know, some consistency isn't a bad thing either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, this idea that you can override them. So docs shouldn't be afraid that anybody's shoving anything down their throat. It's just simple reminders.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, I need such things at home. keep me bringing out the garbage and getting the newspaper in the morning. Mark, we'll talk again next week. Thanks so much. A good abstract this week.
All right, thanks.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.